Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You should celebrate yourself every day, but some days you should celebrate with jewelry. Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined as always by Pete Donaldson, the man, the myth, the legend. Pete, how the devil are you doing? What's going on?
I mean, you say as always, we've had a couple of weeks off because Chris likes to do
skiving.
Chris skiving, yes.
I had an important
project or two I had to get done. So, yeah. Chris, congratulations, mate. It's been, I've been enjoying watching you almost kill yourself, flog yourself on the roads of Japan on your wee bicycle. It's an astonishing piece of work, and we should every person involved should be applauded. Incredible stuff.
I think we've each been waging our own battles. I cycled, 1,000 kilometres or something ridiculous, 2 weeks on a bike up a mountain. Meanwhile, yeah. You yourself, Pete, you were sick at a French restaurant. Each doing our
sick.
Own special.
I wasn't sick at a French restaurant. I was sick after a French restaurant. Okay, so
I haven't spoken to Pete in 2 weeks, and we have our pre-podcast chat.
We're both very thin.
Well, you've been vomiting half of France up, and I've been cycling relentlessly for 2 weeks. Yeah, it's cool. What day is it? It's Thursday. I only stopped cycling a few days ago. My muscles still hurt. I think today I'm getting there, but yeah, my leg muscles are still messed up. We'll get into
Are you cycling in your dream? Are you kind of like waking up and your legs are going like twin pistons?
I do wake up in the morning and I'm like, oh God, I've got to get ready. I've got to get the bike. I've got to run. I've got to get my clothes on. And because that's what it was like for 2 weeks, It's a horrible Groundhog Day-esque sort of cycle to be in, because you get up at we wake up about 7:45 every day. We would leave around 8:15. I wouldn't shower in the morning. I'd just throw on my clothes and sort of run out the door, put a helmet on. And Connor's like, okay, we're going live right now. And I'll be like, oh my God, shit, I'm not ready. Hello, everyone. And on the bike and off we go. And it was just that every day. And then you'd finish around 6-ish, 7-ish, have a dinner, sit in the bath, watch a show, like in my case, House of Dragon or Shogun, and then sleep and do it all over again. And it was relentless. But cool.
I mean, were you doing like ice baths and stuff or just hot baths?
I think one day I had an ice bath. I can't do it. I just freak out. There's a where possible we tried to stay in hotels where there was like onsens and stuff, right, or hot springs.
Nice,
and,
okay, cool.
If you're lucky, certain ones do have the cold bath. And Connor is really good at it. Ian is magic. Like Ian, Ian can do anything.
He's a bigger boy. Yeah,
he's a bigger boy. He's a beast. He's a Swiss Army knife. And he's like, okay, mate, I can submerge in almost anything. And he'll like the Terminator in molten lava. Ian will submerge beneath the frozen water like that. And I'll put my feet in. And I'll be like, ah! And I cannot do it. So kudos to them. I tried to do it, and I'm just like, in the corner of this big hot spring room screaming while all the people look on at me.
I demand warmth. I demand temperature. I do like what I like about Chris is when I did a cycle with Chris, it was, you know, it was very light.
5 minutes.
Very much, yeah. Very much not. Very much razzle dazzle. Very much Hollywood. But I just like when Connor does it. He really does put you through the ringer. And like you go from like editing for about 3 weeks, doing netting, staying up until 3 o'clock in the morning editing, and then you go to getting up at 6 o'clock to bloody cycle. It's insane stuff.
I'm an imbecile. As I've said before, right, I'm a very all or nothing person.
Right.
Like when I was learning Japanese, that's all I did obsessively. I couldn't do anything else.
Yeah.
When I was training for the chess boxing, I was playing chess every day. Didn't fucking help, did it? But I was boxing and doing exercise every day. And with this, I did nothing. I was like, I'm not going to train. I did one 10-kilometer cycle on an exercise bike that I bought and used once. And
right.
then that was it. And I was off cycling 100 kilometers a day for 14 days straight. It
Look
is interesting.
For that exercise
though.
Bike on Facebook Marketplace in Japan, because it will be on sale.
Yeah, you'll see it soon. It's a shame. I don't know why I didn't use it, but the miracle is that I got to the finish line despite not exercising, because it was pretty damn mental. And on the first cycle, I got through it with painkillers. I took like ibuprofen every single day, three times. I probably took 10 years off my life with all the painkillers I took on the Hokkaido cycle. On the second one, I didn't actually use painkillers at all. And that might be why I was depressed for the entirety of the cycle. That and the rain. And this one, I used them one day, I think. But I got through it all with just perseverance and magic. But I don't know how I did it. I think having guests like Gant or Felix or Pete really helped. And one thing I found was the second cycle was really kind of hard and tough and depressing. There's a lot of hills, lots of rain, kind of a boring journey. There wasn't much to see or do. And in hindsight, I was quite antisocial, I think, when I look back at it. I put on these like headphones, these Shox headphones. They're bone conducting headphones. If you ever do exercise, they're really good, so they don't go in your ear and get all sweaty. They sort of conduct like the future. And I just sat on this bike listening to the Stalin audiobook about the life and
your
times
Stalin
of Stalin.
Audiobook. Yeah, that's going to get you up for the cup, isn't it? Yeah.
Nothing learning says positive
learning
thinking.
Learning about exiled thinkers.
I don't know why. I don't know. I don't even know why I chose Stalin. I think it just came up. I was like, I'll learn about Stalin. There was no reason. There's no subtext there. I'm not.
I can't
a
help but think
so
that this is gonna this is gonna taint Chris's content in the future.
But after that, you know, I realised that wasn't good because, you know, poor Connor's trying to entertain everyone, Pete's there, and I'm just rocking up like, blah, 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 Stalin's gulags. And it's like, I need to be there. So on this one, I didn't put my headphones on once. I was there in the trenches being a lot more engaging, a lot more positive where possible. And I think it came across well. But it is trippy. Like, I saw bits of Japan that I didn't know existed and... you know, some really beautiful places that I'll talk about. But the hardest day was the second to last day, though. We had to cycle up 1,200 metres of Mount Fuji, the sort of base of it. And if that was the first sort of week, I think I would have died. But luckily, I'd had a bit of time to build my legs up to it. But my God, I don't know how we did it. There was a lot of swearing and panting and pain. But, you get the most incredible... it's always the most incredibly stunning places with the best views. They always have the most pain. That's something I discovered on this cycle. But I only fell off once. I only fell off one time.
Good boy.
Much to Natsuki's delight. Much to Natsuki's cheer. And, of course, it was the day Natsuki joined. We were cycling through this really beautiful, like, mountain village. This, like, old town. And I was filming... It was my fault entirely. I was filming Connor from behind. He was cycling in front, Natsuki to my side. I was behind Connor. And I was holding the vlogging camera. Don't do that. Don't hold a camera.
Don't hold the vlogging camera.
Don't do that. And I hit his tyre because he braked. And then I went off and bashed my arm and my leg, and it was incredibly painful. And Connor was like, oh, gosh, all right. And Natsuki just went, ah, and laughed for 30 minutes. 30 minutes he laughed. Bastard. No, he wasn't like, oh, daijoubu, Chrissy. He was just like,
no.
He was so happy.
Chris.
I could have died, and he'd have, you know, lit up a Marlboro cigarette and laughed his ass off. Cheeky bastard.
Oh.
But, glad he joined as well, though. Glad he tagged along.
but cracking stuff, and you raised an obscene amount of money. Too much money. It's too much money.
All for the Connor charity. Connor's a private fund.
Connor's charity, yeah.
It was insane. This trip, I think we had a rough kind of target to raise about $750,000 for the Immune Deficiency Foundation. The first one, I think, got $330,000. Second one clocked in $555,000. Mm. And then we were kind of like, well, $750,000 would be good. That'd be a nice one. And we were sort of at, I think, $700,000 on the second to last day, the penultimate day. And then on the last day, something magical happened. Everybody just went ballistic. I think people who were kind of like sitting on the sidelines for 2 weeks just were like, fuck it right now, and got their wallet out because it did not stop. And we raised the entire amount of Cyclothon 1 in the last day of Cyclothon 3. And before we even got to the finish line, it went straight past $1 million. And I think it ended up at $1,030,000. But... yeah, and to any of you guys who watched it and joined along, thank you so much for all your support. It's a strange thing. I think without knowing there were 25,000 people watching every day, it would be hard to stay motivated through all the pain. And I think, obviously we're releasing a video of the Cyclothon, and this time it won't take 1 year to come out because we're gonna push it quickly. We released Cyclothon 2 the night before Cyclothon 3 began. It took 1 year to make it. But we're going to get it out quickly, and hopefully we capture the pain. Hopefully we capture the pain, because I don't think we ever do really kind of show how awful it can be, you know. And it is brutal. And at the last moment when we cycled up to Tokyo Tower, so surreal, right? Because you've spent 2 weeks in a field, up a mountain, in the kind of back streets of a mega city, cycling away alone with Connor, just the two of you, intermittently guest joining. And then you get to Tokyo, and we sort of paused for a moment and went to like a bathroom in a gas station to compose ourselves and, you know, tidy ourselves up a bit. And we knew there was obviously a few hundred people there at Tokyo Tower, people sending photos in advance, just to make me scared and anxious. Because as you know, I get a bit anxious, Pete, when I do public stuff. And we turn up the hill to Tokyo Tower, and, you know, we must have been like 200 yards away, and we just heard screaming and cheering, and it's like, oh fucking hell, this is terrifying, you know. You feel like it's like a scene out of Gladiator, before he's like going out into the fucking stadium, you hear everyone screaming, and there's a shot on stream, we're walking up the hill and everyone's going rah in the distance, and there's these two like foreigners, two white folks, just walking up the hill. I'm like, do you know what all that noise is? What's going on up there? And they're like, oh, I have no idea. And then we walked in, and hundreds of people there. And it, again, to go from like a peaceful 1,000-kilometer cycle to being
real
pushed through
solitude.
A crowd of hundreds, and like, you know, ticker tape shit being thrown at you, and then whisked up on stage, champagne sprayed all over you. My skin had like four layers of crap on. I had sun lotion, dirt from the road, another layer of sun lotion because you rub it in twice a day, and just a gallon of sweat. And then on top of that, they exploded two bottles of champagne over us. And when I met Charlotte later on, she wouldn't like touch me. I think she kissed me, and she got her face was just sticky from all my stickiness. It was like kissing a fucking bit of masking tape. It can't have been fun. Awful. But what a journey. What an adventure.
Yeah. I think you should.
Never again.
I think it's one of those things that you take stock of in a year's time. So it probably is worth giving yourself a little bit of space before you get that video out. But it's incredible stuff. Cycling just never looks. Cycling is the sort of thing that everyone thinks they can do, and then you actually sit on a bike and you're like, this is really hard. Especially in Japan, that's the hilliest place in the world. It's incredible.
No, I think
it's incredible.
Japan is a great country to cycle through. It's a really great place to see Japan.
Huge.
But then you've got like Fuji, and it's like, I spent the night before we cycled over a third of Fuji. I hold court with His Lordship Connor and Ian, and I was like, look at this route, this goes around Mount Fuji, and it was 12 kilometers more, and I was like, we could either go up Fuji and die, or we could do a little bit more and not die. And they were like, let's die. And I was like, okay. Bastards.
Cool.
In hindsight,
I'm not prepared for dying usually.
When, like, it kind of made sense because the first half of the day was just up, right? Battling, going up, trying not to be sick. Like going to a French restaurant and you're okay. And then the second half of the day, it was all downhill. So it was like, you if you survive the climb, the reward is great. And in our case, for I think 5-6 hours, we just got to sit on the bike and go downhill. And that kind of made it worth it, but still not, because the pain. But like, yeah, it's things like that. And honestly, really cool journey. On this podcast, we always talk about, well, I always talk about my dislike for Nagoya, right? Because it's a big mega city with no discerning features. And we cycled through it, and I tried to find something positive, Pete. I did, but it's just a shithole.
Can't find it.
Maybe we didn't cycle through the right bit. I don't know. Yeah. But it was just about 6 hours of industrial madness.
I love your kind of like hate relationship with Nagoya. It's very funny. The one town I couldn't get.
There was one saving grace though, and that was Legoland. We did get to go to Legoland Nagoya 2 hours.
I see.
And
well, there you go.
That might have been the highlight of the whole trip. But having Legoland still doesn't make Nagoya good. And there's one bit where I got a bit mental at Legoland. There's a ride, or the pirate ship adventure ride. And you get to go on these little pirate ships, and people who are sort of spectators can squirt you with water pistols, and you on the pirate ship can fire your water pistol.
I just
stood there, and I massacred like 3 families, and they were like trying to shoot me back, and I was like, no. And you power it by turning it like this, you twist this like handle, and I was like,
you had a power drill connected.
Yeah, like a Gatling gun. And like, I felt bad. There was one kid sitting on this little pirate ship that came around the corner, and I got him in the face for like 20 seconds, and he had a little plastic sword, and he was like waving it to surrender, and I was like, yeah, that's not how the pirate ship
It's not how surrendering works, and he needs to be on nodding terms with how to surrender correctly with a white flag and all that stuff. So
exactly.
Or a handkerchief. So he needs to you've taught him a valuable lesson there, Chris, and I'm very proud of you.
Absolutely. I think if you're going on the pirate ship adventure ride at your Legoland, you know, don't stand the heat. If you can't stand the heat, get off the pirate ship. But I fucked him up because I kept firing. And instead of surrendering, he used the plastic sword as a sort of lightsaber to deflect the water. But he failed because it's water.
And that just made you want it more.
Made me more ruthless. Apparently, though, he got off the ride. I didn't see this. He got off the ride and he started charging towards me with the sword. Pete and Connor told me afterwards.
Yeah.
He wanted his revenge. And apparently his mum stopped him. I didn't see this.
Held him back like Tony Blair on that Christmas card. Just leave it. Leave it, Dave.
It was bad. But yeah, what a trip.
Well done,
what
Chris.
A trip.
What I'm very proud of you.
Yeah. But video should be out in May, dare I say.
Lovely. Cool. Yeah. That little child had immune deficiency. You are the worst.
Oh, God.
You are the worst.
I hope not. Oh, my God. Yeah, Jesus. Well, we've got a story from Jake, who begins, "Hello, Chris and Pete. As you know, Japan is famous for their reliable public transportation. I lived in Yokosuka for 4 months in 2022, and I can confirm it's excellent most of the time. On this particular day in early March, I checked the weather and saw that it was clear skies at Mount Fuji the next day, so I bought a train ticket and went down the following day. It was beautiful, sunny and clear, with Fuji-san showing the best of himself. I spent the full day walking around Kawaguchiko and enjoying the sights and views of Mount Fuji. I then got a bus to Oishi Park by Lake Kawaguchi to get some pictures of Fuji from across the lake at sunset. Once done, I returned to the bus stop to catch the last bus back to the train station. I waited and waited and waited. After the bus was 30 minutes late, I realised I'd have to get another way back. As I looked, I realised there were no Ubers, no taxis, and it dawned on me that I'd have to make the 6 kilometre walk back to the train station through the cold and the dark. I sighed, put the directions into Google Maps and began my trek. The temperature plummeted as the sun went down, and I had to duck into a Family Mart halfway to wolf down some fried chicken for energy and to thaw out. Ah, yes, there was nothing but to eat fried chicken in this hour of need. What you should do is, you know, like convenience stores have like coffee and stuff heated, right? Grab a few bottles of that, stuff it in your pockets. As I got within a kilometre of the station, Google Maps directed me to cut through a schoolyard and a residential neighbourhood. Imagine you're a Japanese family at home enjoying dinner, and you look out your window to see an angry, cold, 2-metre foreigner stomping past in the dark. I finally made it to the station, caught the train back to my hotel, which was right on time. Trains, as always, on time. I wonder, have you ever been let down by Japanese public transport? All the best, Jake. I mean, yeah, Kawaguchi's not somewhere you want to get stranded. I'm taking a trip to the mountains next week, trekking up a mountain, because let's do more exercise for some reason. And I'm really worried,
let's
actually.
Let's do fewer podcasts and more exercise.
Poor old P. You know, the podcast will repeat alone in a minute.
Let's make the schedule even more difficult.
But no, I'm worried about this as well. I'm worried about this happening.
Right.
And there's a risk.
What about your little bubble car you gave Natsuki? What about that, lad? You just borrow that.
I still haven't got the K car back.
Yeah.
And every time I'm like, how's the K car? He's like, oh, very bad smell. I'm going to fucking clean it then. Hoover it up or something.
Smell.
Give it a cheeky clean.
I've been doing a lot of poos in there. It's very bad smell.
What's
it's
he doing?
It's all it deserves.
He maintains like an old grandma died in it or something still, and that's why it smells bad.
Right,
I think it's
okay.
Because Connor and Joey dropped their sandwiches all over the floor, each to their own interpretation.
Yeah.
Japanese, you know, transport is good. Lord knows what happened to the bus. Maybe I'm more inclined to think, unfortunately, Jake, you might have cocked up yourself there.
Might have cocked it up there,
rare.
Jake, to be honest. Yeah, they're usually pretty good. I do like Japanese buses. I've only been on a couple. Those kind of like little city ones that are just like, you know, if I needed to get to, say I was in Camden Town and I needed to get to Kentish Town, I would use a red London bus. Those kind of ones that just go around like the centre of town and stuff. They're quite... I don't know, efficient. And they don't seem to have a lot of, like, bus lanes. They just seem to just absolutely whip it around. It's not a bad way to get around if you want to see a bit more rather than the inside of a subway hall or tube.
I saw a photo, actually, just a minute ago of a bus. Mm. I'm not sure where. It might have been Tokyo or Kyoto. And it was full. And two, I'm going to say, middle-aged white women were sitting down on the stair to get higher up to the back of the bus because all the seats were full. And the comment was like, foreigners sit anywhere on the bus, blah. And somebody replied, well, you know, they look quite old and the bus was full. And
maybe somebody should have given them the seats.
Maybe someone should have given them the seat, you know.
Yeah.
It's become a thing this week, actually, on the subject of public transport and foreign folks here doing things. There was a shot of a foreign guy, you know, on the train, holding the handles and pulling himself like a jungle gym, which didn't go down too well, which is fair enough. It looks a bit twatty, but, well, you know, we've got to be careful. I know we talk about a lot on the podcast foreigners doing shit things, but, you know, people do get a bit, like, caught up on foreigners doing anything wrong, the slightest thing sometimes.
It's mainly the foreigners going in with 2 feet as well, isn't it? Idiots, you're making it more difficult for me. To be fair, I think the jungle gym thing I have possibly done just simply because they look so fragile. They're like this sort of light plastic with sort of vinyl straps, and they look like they couldn't hold your weight, but they can hold your weight. So there you go.
Maybe he wasn't working out. He was testing
the tensile strength of the ropes. Yes, exactly.
You never know. You never know. Yep. But I don't know. We got to be careful not to get into this trap of looking at foreigners doing things
anything
wrong
existing
and, I gotta make sure I don't become part of the problem, because obviously I've covered bad foreigner activity in Japan a few times. It always does well, and if I was a complete dick, which I probably am, I could just keep doing that every video. I'd be like, oh, foreigners are bad, I've ruined it for everyone, blah.
Yeah.
You know, after I did the Kyoto video, before I went on the cycle, the one called like foreigners versus Japan, a tourist problem, I can't remember. Foreigners versus Japan, a worsening problem. I got so many messages from people who were like, oh my God, should I come to Japan? Is it safe? Is it okay still? It's like, yeah, don't worry. It's like one street in Kyoto.
Oh, I want to see some geishas. I want to see the geishas.
I was there to highlight that things, you know, we got to be careful that you know, but also one thing, I was very careful when I was scripting that video. I had a whole section where I was going to talk about how Japanese media loves the topic of foreigners doing things wrong. It's a topic they love to latch onto. In the same way I have, you know, covered it in a sensationalist way, so do Japanese media. And, you know, Japanese folks do bad stuff wrong as well, all the time here, you know, and it gets glazed over. It's a much more compelling story to have the foreign person doing the wrong thing. You can't want 30 million people to come to your country and expect it to go perfectly. Really, I think it's gone very well, you know. A lot more things could have gone wrong. Until someone crashes one of those fucking twatty go-karts around Shibuya.
They're still kicking them all.
Oh, my God. I was in Shibuya earlier, and they're everywhere, revved up. Mm. I don't like them. I hate them. And I, you know, I a friend of mine who's over at the moment, he was like, oh, I was thinking of going on one. And I was like, I'll kill you. If you go on those go-karts, I'll do something.
I'll throw a banana in your way.
I'll be bananas at you. It'll be like Mario Kart. Just because I think it is a bad idea. I think if you want to see Kyoto in a fun way, just rent a bike or an e-bike and see it, you know, see it at your own pace. The go-karts are not a good idea because you're getting folks who have flown over from Europe, America, they're jet-lagged, they're fucked up. Yeah. You're going, oh, I've got the go-kart, and now let's drive around the world's biggest city with no sleep. And things are going to go wrong, as they did a few years ago, and they, like, crashed into my favourite fish and chip shop. And maybe that's why I hate them. If you're going to crash... Yeah. If they crash into anything else, I'd be like, ah, it's fine.
That was your own personal 9/11. It was like, I will never forget this act. Never.
The fish and chip shop.
The
debacle.
Fish and chip shop.
I just don't think it's a good... I think something's going to go wrong for either people in the go-kart or people in a car. But, you know, and it's going to happen. It's just a matter of time. And that's why I think it's a good idea. And there's
Look
so many other good things
there.
To do.
Not everything's an Instagram moment.
Indeed. And if you, you know, if you come to Japan,
safety.
Just there you go on the go-karts. Rent a bike. Like, such a great place to see by bike. Speaking from
bike
recent
boy.
Experience.
Bike boy. Bike man's here. Oh God, he's selling his own personal. Are you gonna have like one of those sponsored bikes, like a Shimano Chris Broad joint, where you join up and make like a bicentennial, like a anniversary of the bike?
I mean, we got like heated on the bikes because Connor owned a Cannondale, which is a US bike. I owned a Cervelo, which I thought was Italian. Turns out it's Canadian. And various things went wrong with our bike, and we would keep popping each other's bikes, and something went wrong with my seat, and he was like, oh, Cervelo, rubbish, blah, blah. But then his bike got punctured 3 times on the cycle. Even though Connor had spare tyres with him, thank fuck, because he had to use them. I had nothing. If my tyres had gone, I'd have been stuffed. Didn't get punctured once. Cervelo power, take that.
Even though it's just the sheer force of will that you didn't have any backups, that your bike kind of stayed in the game a little bit.
Quite maybe they just couldn't carry Connor's ego, Connor's weight on those bikes. Although to be fair, on the second to last day, he got a puncture. Literally the final hour of the last second to last day, the worst possible time, and we found out a few hours before. I'd been cycling through this place and at the side of this big road, and I noticed there was loads of rusty nails just laying in the ground of the road.
Right,
and it was very like. Confusing. Like, why is there just? It had been like somebody got a bucket and just gone, hey, of rusty nails out the window, and they were kind of small and tucked into the road, the tarmac. And I remember seeing them and, you know, dodging them and weaving them. And sure enough, when Connor's bike went to the bike shop, they looked at the tire and there was a big rusted nail sticking out of it, and they pulled it out. And Connor hadn't seen the nails. He got nailed.
Could this be have been sabotage from another group? Possibly.
Well, it became a joke that I had sabotaged Connor's bike for views.
Right.
And to add to the drama. And I was like, before we got to Tokyo Tower, I was like, come on, let me slash your tyres. What a great moment this will be. You and your fucked bike. He didn't share my vision. And probably for all the right reasons.
I'm very tired, Chris.
Indeed. He wouldn't have been happy. We'll be back in just a moment, guys, with your stories, comments and questions over in the fax machine.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. In our daily lives, we all carry around with us different stressors. They can be big, they can be small, and sometimes we might not even realize that we're carrying them around with us. But if these feelings stay bottled up, they can start to affect us negatively, which is why having a positive outlet for discussion can be such a valuable tool for your well-being. Therapy can be a perfect outlet for your inner stressors. It's a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. Sometimes just speaking things out into the open can be such a great release of inner tension, so you can spend less time stressing about the issue and more time figuring out how you can overcome it. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
We're back with the fax machine. Before that, though, thank you guys to everyone who bought the Abroad Japan book recently. April 1st, the day that I started cycling, it got announced as non-fiction book of the month at Waterstones, Britain's biggest book retailer. And they threw it everywhere. I've had photos from so many folks around the UK of it. And also, then it became the biggest selling book in the UK again. So thank you so much. Like, it's awesome. If you've I hadn't been cycling, I would have come over to celebrate. It's also quite fun.
You've got a massive display in Waterloo, I believe, with real Hanami flowers, etc.
Yeah, they like Waterstones really went to town on this. So thank you to anyone here.
You gave them good eating before Christmas with the hardback edition. So they were like, we're going all out for, you know, the otaku, the Japanese obsessed. The cheapskates, as I call them.
And my editor, Dave, actually, he's just flown over here, and he was on the flight coming over, and the person in front of him was reading the book, and he sent some of the book. That was kind of cool.
Nice.
It's nice to know the book is doing well.
I know that guy. I can get you pictures of him. Oh, Dave.
He should have done
it. You're the worst.
He should have done it. Anyway, what we got this week at the fax machine, Mr. Donaldson, fill us in.
We got a message from Jeremy, who's spelling his name quite interesting. Jeromy. Never seen Jeremy. The like of it. Good on him, Jeremy. Hi, Chris and Pete. Thank you. This podcast helped my wife and I plan our trip to Hokkaido last September. My question for you both is, have you ever visited any of the prehistoric sites and museums in Japan? Places like the Sanai Maruyama in Aomori, or any of the Kofun period tombs, or even the Ainu museums in Hokkaido. As much as I love the shrines, temples and castles, I like the much older sites, and these sort of places don't get much interest from non-Japanese tourists. Take care. Thanks again, Jeremy. Have you visited... What counts as the coffin period? I might have to give that a little Google, figure out when that is.
The coffin period.
The coffin period.
I mean, it's probably like 2,000, 3,000 years ago, right?
Right,
And Jomon era... I mean, I have been to a few places. I've been to Sanai Maruyama. It's all right. It's kind of cool. It's not like Stonehenge, where it's like the actual structure from like 3,000 years ago. It's kind of like reconstructed. Yeah. And so I've never feel that kind of impressed by it, because it was like built last Tuesday. A lot of these places, anyway. I like the Ainu town in Hokkaido. We went there last year on Journey Across Japan. It was called like... I survived Japan's coldest town. In that one, we went to this Ainu village, and it was stunning and really kind of unique. And we ate, I think we ate deer, because that's the food of Hokkaido for the Ainu people.
What I always love about these kind of museums when they've got seriously old stuff is that how they display these ridiculously old... Like, you're used to sort of seeing relics portrayed and displayed in certain ways, but the Japanese just know how to use lighting and reflectivity and ambiance in their museums. If you're a proper museum head, it really is something that people probably don't talk about all that much in Japan and stuff. I think they display their artifacts beautifully.
Yeah, no, they do. I do feel like they don't do the best job at making it fun, though. A lot of Japanese museums.
I want to put on an old helmet, an old dirty helmet that's rusty.
I like the button pushing. If I'm going to a museum, I want to push a button, Pete. I've got to
Science museum. I want to look. I want to know how an earthquake's made.
I mean, I haven't actually been to many museums in Tokyo. The one I do like is the Mirai Kan, the Future Museum, where they have Asimo. Or they used to before they got rid of him and killed him. Bastards, bring back Asimo. Yeah, that was cool. The Mirai Kan, that's worth a shot. If you're in Odaiba, go over there. Don't go on the go-karts, go to Odaiba, look at a building where Asimo used to be. Why did they get rid of it? Oh, annoys me. I loved Asimo. Hello, Chris and Pete. I'm making my second visit to Japan at the beginning of May, and I realise I'll be arriving in the middle of Golden Week. I plan to stay in Tokyo during my visit. What can I expect from crowds? Are there any neighbourhoods or attractions I should avoid? Have I made a terrible mistake? Or will it just be a bustling few days in the big city? I appreciate your guidance. As always, Liz from Des Moines. How do you pronounce
that? Des Moines.
Des Moines. Des Moines.
Fucking Des Moines, baby. Like,
where's Des Moines?
It's in America.
That's a nice
name. I don't actually know.
It's in Iowa, apparently.
It's in Iowa. Wow. I was thinking Idaho for some reason. There's some words.
I mean, Golden Week is a time to not come to Japan where possible. Most notably, the trains are messed up. Like, you will have to battle to get a seat.
Chris has got a real stick in his bum about Golden Week and travelling to Japan in Golden Week. That's something we've heard time and time again on the podcast. But times out of ten, people have an okay time, don't they? They can get around.
I remember I moved to Japan last year and I was here for Golden Week in Tokyo. Sorry, I moved to Tokyo.
Wow.
And I was in Tokyo, right? And people often say to me, oh, don't worry, Chris, Golden Week, Tokyo is not that busy because everyone goes home back to their, you know, respective
towns
preferences
and stuff,
whatnot. And I went to Shibuya Crossing and it was fucked. I know, got swept away in a river of people. Like, it was brutal. And whoever said Golden Week is not busy in Shibuya was telling a porky pie. And I'll be hiding under my duvet that week. I don't know what I've got planned Golden Week this year, but I will be sitting in here, hiding under a table, as I always do. I will avoid it at all costs, and you should too. It's nice, not good. It's just good. I think good if you are Japanese, because it's a time to go back and see family and whatnot, but yeah, I would definitely not recommend it. Hotels are booked, trains are booked. What can I recommend you do? I don't know, really. Just stay away from the big spots like Shibuya, like Asakusa and Shinjuku, maybe. Try and find less busy neighbourhoods like Shinbashi, I don't know.
But you sort of think, if I'm in London, right? I've no interest in Leicester Square. And Shibuya is basically Leicester Square, isn't it? So I don't think, surely it won't be too bad, because the Japanese people have I got no business going there.
True. I don't know. All I know is Just hide. Hide under a duvet. Just hide. Right, just off hide. That bit of your holiday. You've flown from Iowa. just hide. Get under the duvet. Got one last one from Chris in Glasgow. It says, Dear Chris and Pete, has Sea Dog VA started legal proceedings against Cosmo Jarvis for his blatant rip-off of Connor's ridiculous accent for his role as John Blackthorne in Shogun? Keep up the good work and thank you for the pod, Chris in Glasgow. It's literally the same. You haven't seen Shogun yet, have you?
No, I haven't.
You just saw that out. It's good stuff.
No.
It's nearly finished.
Been busy.
It's busy.
Go finished.
The main character is just Connor. If you look up a clip of like the white guy in Shogun, and whoever the producer is just went, oh, there's a guy living in Japan from Wales. Can you just like look and talk like him? And, you know, the actual actor playing him, Cosmo Jarvis, the best name anyone has ever had.
His middle name is sounds like a hotel. Krikorian. It's Armenian. I think it's Armenian, I believe.
Cosmo Krikorian Jarvis. It's a cool name. I want to be called Cosmo. he put on this accent. If you listen to him in interviews, he is not... He's quite different, you know. He puts on this he puts a deep, sort of deep, booming voice. And he sounds like Connor. And he looks like Connor with the facial hair. And on the team on Shogun, 100% went, dude, that guy there, the one in Wales, in Connor. Just do that.
Yeah.
I shit you not. I genuinely believe that happened. And if you look up a clip of this guy, you will believe it too. But Shogun, it ends next week. And if you haven't started watching it, check it out. It's pretty good. Yeah. I really enjoyed it.
Every person, because I'm known as being a bit of a Japanophile, every person I know. You're watching Shogun, aren't you, Pete? You're watching Shogun. No, actually, I'm not. So it's almost made me less likely to do it because people think I'm doing it.
Busy being sick down French restaurants, isn't it?
Busy being sick into a suckling pig at a French restaurant.
Oh, man, you'll get around to it. I mean, Connor only started watching it the other day. He's like, I want to watch it when it's finished. I want to watch it when it's over. And I kind of get it. Because I was like that with Game of Thrones. I waited till like 3 or 4 seasons. It's nice to like binge watch the whole thing, right? So you'll have that chance. You'll have that opportunity. You can binge watch the whole of Shogun in 1 10-hour session somewhere in the next month in Golden Week, which we don't have in the UK, thank God.
Yeah.
Keep the stories, questions, comments coming into abornjapanpodcast@gmail.com or leave a comment down below here on the YouTube. But for now, guys, have yourself a great few days. We'll see you right back here to do all over again as I click my fingers over and over. What am I doing? Have yourselves a good one, though. And, stay safe out there. Don't know why I said that. It's like Shogun. Don't know. Go watch it.
Abroad in Japan is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.